Welcome back to the Gather Dispatch for another month. It has been a wacky and wild summer for those social platforms, and I brought the dream team of experts in here with me to chat about what is going on out there with the threads, the tweets, the X's, the blue skis. I don't even know anymore, but that's why I got people smarter than me in the room. Joining me for the first segment today is returning guest, fan favorite, Christophe Jamet.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back. And then next to Christophe is a first-timer, longtime listener, I assume. I'll let him pick his favorite episodes in order after this. Copywriter, content strategist, editor, editorial wizard, and famous on the internet individual, Nick Douglas.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Long time, welcome. First time.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for coming in. And later on, we will have some call-in guests who I will leave as a mystery unless you are savvy enough to read show notes, who are going to break down some best practices for brands in the social space. But first, we're going to help you figure out what's going on with the newcomers, what's going on with the old standbys when it comes to short form, written content. So what everyone wants to know is, which non-Twitter is your favorite? We'll start there.
Gotta be Blue Sky.
Gotta be Blue Sky.
Has some involvement from Jack, which
is... And that's a good thing.
Inherently funny that the guy who invented Twitter sold Twitter, started another company,
yeah,
and made Twitter again.
Yeah.
Do what you're good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's enough for a gotta be from you. Gotta be number one.
Gotta be. It's got good vibes right now.
Okay.
It's just the weird parts. I was user number about 1,000 on Twitter, literally.
Yeah.
I was around for the beginning. And this is a similar energy, which is, it is very Bandcamp theater kid energy, which isn't for everybody, but it's fun. It's for me. It's very much the opposite of what's going on Threads.
All right. CJ, what is your favorite non-Twitter?
I gotta say, I'm a Mastodon stan.
Okay.
It is fun and nerdy.
Okay.
How many hours of setup?
Not a lot. But it is kind of like a low-grade IQ test, so it does keep a lot of the Twitter riffraff out, I think.
I love a self-selecting audience, which leaves me the man in the room to champion Threads, which I will not do. So let's talk about where the exodus has come from. X, nay Twitter, a cesspool from which brands are fleeing. The quality is going downhill and our free speech absolutist is turning the ship any which way his ideologies desire. Is there anything left to stay for just from a consumer perspective? We'll get to the brands later and see if there's any value to be wrung out of this bone dry sponge. But as an individual, as a user, as somebody who wants to get utility out of the internet, is there anything still there?
So I left Twitter. By left, I mean I don't visit it every day anymore. Early in the Elon takeover, and felt it was a gift. I've had a love-hate relationship, as many of us have, for several years on there. It's not fun sometimes to be there, even before this happened. I was surprised how few people also decided to leave, that they were sick of it. Of course, the algorithm, part of its purpose, I suspect, at this point, is to hide whether people are leaving or not. Even Threads, for a little while, I didn't realize, oh, wait, there are only 10 people posting here. Because as long as I just had a little more than I could read, it's going to serve me that endless feed. Because it wasn't chronological, it took me a while to realize, oh, these are all from 5 days ago.
Yeah.
And Twitter might still be doing that, but still, every time I go on, a lot of my favorites, I haven't convinced them to move over to Blue Sky. No one's convinced them anywhere else. So I hate to say that there's still a lot of value, even for those of us who don't like any of the changes Musk has made.
Okay.
It's engagement largely driven by controversy and outrage. And in a world where brands have conditioned media companies to only care about clicks and engagement, regardless of the sentiment it generates, they've kind of backed themselves into that corner. And there's such little meaningful discourse that happens there, and people have kind of forgotten what social networks are supposed to do as a function. And I think they're supposed to enrich people's lives by letting people who are not physically next to each other interact, engage, share ideas, have discourse, celebrate things they have in common and that they enjoy. And that just doesn't happen on Twitter anymore. I think B schools in like 10 years are going to have this as a case study of what happens when you let one guy with way too much money and way too much hubris do whatever he wants to something that was like a ubiquitous communication platform for society.
Mm-hmm. Cory Doctorow has put forward a great theory that everybody's been talking about for the last year or so about the decline of platforms that he calls enshittification. And the usual process is that a platform, after building a healthy ecosystem, sucks dry each of the stakeholders, the users, the advertisers, vendors. And you see this across, you know, this is why Amazon is covered in ads. This is why every social network will crowd you with content you didn't want and then charge pages to still deliver that content to you. Mm-hmm. Twitter was already undergoing this process, just like all the other platforms. And then Elon Musk comes in and is not making rational business decisions. The enshittification is in some ways a semi-rational path, even though it does, according to Doctorow, inevitably end in shutting down the platform. It is an extraction of value from the platform until it is worth nothing. But then Elon just barrels in and, you know, ruins the ad market, not by trying to extract more out of it, but by just disregarding and not caring or not anticipating what it means to run an ad-driven company as opposed to the other companies that he's run, which at the end of the day do provide a service for money directly.
Right. Right. It also kind of shows what drives the priorities in business decisions, and it's not user feedback. I've seen it happen on Reddit as well, even though it's still like one of the most important information gateways on the internet right now. It also brings up for me the double-edged sword of algorithms. Algorithms, when used for good, are really helpful. They're going to show you content that you want to see. But in an enshittification environment, it ruins the experience of what's available. There might be good content on Twitter that you want to see. Are they showing it to you? No. Yeah. And post-Elon, he's been manipulating those algorithms to show you stuff from political point of views that they know are antithetical to what you want to see because they want you to rage on it. So that's a good example, I think.
There's two directions I want to go from here. Let's do the dangerous one and try to read Elon Musk's mind first, and then we'll hopefully blessedly get off this platform. I am of a cynical nature, generally speaking, so this is an obvious road for me to go down. I'm finding it more difficult to believe over time that the truism of never attribute to malice what can just be stupidity is still at play here. If I were someone who was some sort of right-wing ideologue masquerading as literally anything else and wanted to shut down a healthy sort of discourse in the world starting about 15 months away from, I don't know, a presidential election, the things that I would do are roughly chronologically exactly the things that Elon Musk has done to this platform. Am I giving him too much credit?
Yes.
Okay.
He's not playing 5D chess. He thinks he's a smart person, and I think Elon is a great example of what happens when somebody has so much money that they're able to completely do away with anyone that would tell them what they're doing is stupid.
Yeah, I agree, and I do have to disclose that I've made a small amount of money off of buying options against Tesla. But a real tell is, or a real sign that this is not an intentional plan, is that Elon did very publicly have to take out loans against his Tesla shares to support the purchase of Twitter. It's quite a lot to explain how he would put himself at such risk there just to shut down Twitter, especially when he seems to genuinely enjoy all the attention he gets on Twitter. If it shuts down, he won't get that anymore. You know, he's obviously a Trump-like figure. It actually hurt Trump when he was taken off Twitter and had to only speak to those who were already on board with him on Truth Social.
Okay.
I would also say the way he's been running the company as an example is proof that he's not some Bond villain trying to manipulate the world in that way, because operationally the company's a mess from a security point of view, from their exposure to like GDPR style laws.
Right.
Okay. It's just a hodgepodge of really bad tech practices from a guy who thinks he's an engineering genius, even though he's never
been to
engineering school.
You could burn it down without exposing yourself to all of the lawsuit risk that he is.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I mean, maybe I feel a little bit better about this. The other road I wanted to go down, let's get out of the X world for a while. Back to the enshittification of things. Which platforms have managed to elide the seemingly inevitable end of post-extraction husk, which have bounced back, perhaps? I mean, as I'm running them through in my head, Facebook certainly felt a lot more husk-like maybe 2-4 years ago than it's feeling now. The core product of Facebook, we were all very much worried about it. I mean, I would say it's a pause less than a rebound, and certainly some maneuver of look over there to Instagram and look over there to other things that they're sort of failing to accomplish. But the agita over the evils wrought by Facebook master product has seemed to go away to some extent. Reddit remains a very useful platform in the middle of its own IPO efforts to eat its own nose off its face. How do any of these platforms survive? Which ones are surviving?
I think you've got a good point with Facebook that they've got enough options to juggle through. And in Instagram, for example, which I think is still one of the most healthily performing networks, mm-hmm. one of my tests is just, you know, can I see coworkers, friends I hang out with, and my parents in the same network mm-hmm. and feel comfortable about that? And Instagram is still the leader there. Yet it's still is outrunning its own intrusification. Mm-hmm. There have been full feature articles written interviewing so many creators who were paid a lot more money to make objectively worthless content because it got views and engagements than the good stuff that they were already making. And it definitely doesn't seem that there was any executive at Instagram thinking, yes, long term, this is a successful program we're running, paying for this kind of content.
Yeah.
They were actively paying to make the platform worse and make it look more like a lot of what we've seen on Facebook over the last several years, where it's just garbage videos condescending to the least discerning audience, which only works for a while. And that's part of why it's intrusification leads to the death of a business, because you can't get by with only that low quality content. And yet Instagram still just has enough momentum. No major competitor, BeReal, just didn't seem to be a real threat.
Yeah.
I am probably ignoring the youth user base. I haven't used Snapchat for years, but I understand that it's still really held on.
Yeah.
Even the most successful platforms are still having to outrun themselves. I don't think there's any major platform. The only platform that's not currently outrunning it that I'm aware of is Tumblr, that's not facing that problem, is Tumblr, because it already happened, right? Yeah, it already got extracted.
Yeah.
And instead of intrusification, that was mainly the older version of platform death, where you get acquired by a company that doesn't know how to treat you, and everyone slowly leaves. But who is there is a healthy community. Tumblr has a healthy community.
Well, the thing is, you can't really intrusify if you never actually monetize.
Right.
You have to figure out how to make money to get worse at it.
I think that the platforms that outrun intrusifications are the ones that have no ad revenue to worry about. Because ad revenue is what's going to drive you towards those behaviors.
Yeah.
But essentially, if you're on an open source platform and you don't have an ad revenue mechanism, you're not going to be subject to those same decisions that you have to make because you want to drive your ads forward.
Yeah. The platform I always forget to talk about as a platform is YouTube. It is like the Kleenex of video. It just is where video exists. But they clearly had the same process happening, the same fluctuating standards for what algorithms would enjoy over the course of many, many years, and the same people flocking to the lowest common denominator to get to that. Where are they in the ecosystem with TikTok nipping at their heels, trying to pivot themselves into short form to catch up, getting over their own troubles of integration into people's election plans? What do we feel about YouTube?
I actually find myself watching YouTube a lot. There's a lot of really interesting content that you're not going to want to watch on TikTok that you would watch on YouTube. And I also think that they've been able to survive the Twitch onslaught for a while, which I think has also kind of stabilized out. I think that was a real risk for them for a long time, is what was going on with Twitch.
Well, and they also spent money to buy off a lot of the top layer of that and incorporate them, as Facebook did with less success.
YouTube's also got the advantage of evergreen content, a lot like Reddit. Mm. You search for that stuff years later in a way, partly because it's long form also, right?
And it's entertainment and utility. There's utility to be found in the decades of tutorials and other things in YouTube.
Oh, right. The utility stays a lot longer than the utility on Twitter and a Facebook feed, which is you need that stuff the first minute.
Right, exactly. And the same way the best practices of Googling right now are to add Reddit to the search terms to actually get good tutorialing, you can do the same thing with YouTube. And so there is meaningful use to the content they put up outside of longer form entertainment.
That's also their advantage. I mean, it's owned by the biggest search engine. So they're naturally going to surface YouTube content, even if you don't type in YouTube. If you go to the video tab on a search result, YouTube's going to show up first.
Sure.
It's YouTube and then one TV clip that's on like LimeZoom.biz.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, perhaps is this then their bulwark against enshittification, is that they will always have a backbone of actual utility?
That's a good question, because that doesn't necessarily prevent it.
Let's do the experiment. If all of Twitter, all of its clones, left this earth tomorrow, how much utility would meaningfully get lost? I think you can say the same thing for the Facebook universe of things. Facebook would mostly just steal your memories, and if you've lodged a lot of pictures in there, that would be annoying. Twitter, you would lose some cultural moments that are increasingly difficult to search your way to find, and the access you would lose is really, really meaningful. But if YouTube or Reddit snapped off the planet, there's a corpus of meaningful utility that is just gone.
Right. It's more like losing Wikipedia than like losing Twitter.
Right, right.
It's like losing a library versus a phone sort of thing, right? One is really more for the back and forth. The other is for the core information that you're seeking to access and commentary around that information you were looking for.
But, you know, losing your phone
sucks.
would be a problem.
It's not fun.
And that's also the answer to why Twitter is holding on, I think, a little longer against other comers, is it's the only one that still has the largest user base, still has where the action is. And that still is something essential.
It is. And I think that I've been thinking about what types of accounts are keeping people on Twitter or keeping people relevant.
Okay.
And I think it's largely media companies and government organizations. And I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop, because especially with government organizations or municipalities or organizations that serve the public as their core responsibility, to rely on your primary immediate basis of communications to leave it in the hands of someone like Elon is just so risky, because it becomes less and less robust a platform to get information to people quickly and safely and accurately. I think the first bit of news that I saw that has shown the shift is that the BBC just spun up its own Mastodon server with six accounts. When you spin up your own server on Mastodon, no one's coming for you. No one's going to block you. Your information is out there in the public. The only thing that's missing is the critical mass of population that has access to it. But the future promise of a federated network and activity pub means it'll be easy for people to access that once the infrastructure comes around, right? Threads is going to be on activity pub, Blue Sky's on activity pub. They're all being connected to the Fediverse, and you're going to be able to access that information regardless of what platform you're on.
It's really that Voltron that is the only real existential risk to Twitter other than implosion.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. You know, the town square metaphor is used all the time for Twitter, and I think it was apt. As the lights in that town square fade, what is most likely to replace it? And is just the Fediverse the only possible answer to replace that feeling if you actually are broadcasting to a public that includes passerbys and strangers and authentic institutions? Is that the only answer, or is anything else looming as a possible town square?
I'd say in the short form text format, the immediate drop off on threads and the drop off mostly coming from real solo people, where brands are all that's left talking to each other, tells me if Facebook couldn't do it, no one's going to do it unless... again, the other competitors can combine. So threads can exist as part of a Fediverse.
Yeah.
I think that as long as the one that comes out on top is connected to the Fediverse, it kind of doesn't matter which one you end up on, because you're going to be able to see each other's content.
Okay.
But I do, and we'll talk about this later, I think, but like we should be locking down alternatives to Twitter, because it could happen any day.
Yeah.
You know, he could just trip the wrong switch in the building and... Yeah. Set it on fire or something.
Well, into this tumultuous environment, so bravely go the brands. And that's what we're going to talk about in our B segment. After a little break, we're going to invite our brilliant social strategists who do a lot of work with our clients, helping them navigate these spaces and figuring out where they should put their content. And we're going to talk about best practices for this moment, how to survive the shifts, and where the numbers say you should be putting your stuff. So we'll be right back.
Checking out my last resort.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are back from the break with some of our heaviest brain power calling in from across the country to deliver nothing but facts, figures, and best practices. I would like to introduce you to first-timer on the podcast, Rashad Alion, a social and PR strategist who has been working with Gather for a couple years now, and Tariq Ahmad, who is a social media manager and expert. I'm heartbroken not to see you in person.
Next time.
Tariq, one of his superpowers beyond being a social media SME is brightening every single room that he's in. So our worlds are darker for your absence.
I'll put a check in the mail for you then, Jason. I appreciate the compliment.
You know, I always tell people if and when aliens do come down, Tariq's the first person I'm shoving in front of them.
I appreciate that, CJ.
All right. So we have just finished talking about the lay of the land of the post-Twitter short-form content. And Rashad has come in with some actual numbers to see if our instincts are well-founded. Rashad, are there any clear trends on performance for how these new post-Twitters are actually doing?
It's a great question, Jason, and thank you for having me. So obviously we have like a lot of new players in the field right now. You got your Threads, you got your Blue Sky, you got Mastodon. It's hard to really like justify or try to rationalize where your brand should be just based on the numbers alone, right? Because say you look at Threads, right off the bat, they had 49 million users. And that was literally only because it was so easy to sign up.
Yeah.
Instagram account, suddenly you're on Threads. It was funny because you were seeing brands say like, oh, congrats to our 100,000 followers after 2 days.
Right.
And I was like, you literally did not do any work to justify that. Within a week, this new signups halved. They went from 49 million to 23.6 million in less than 1 week. But at the end of the day, I think it's not really like ideal for brands to be on Threads because right now it's kind of like a poor man's Twitter or X. Mm-hmm. You don't have all the features, right? Right now, like my recommendation would be like, don't go on Threads. You can have an account, but posting regularly, you're not going to see many people on there.
Hey, so that is the first confirmed instinct from us to not care about Threads at all. The numbers back us up one for one. All right, Rashad, where to next?
Let's go to Blue Sky.
All right.
In metrics provided to TechCrunch by Data AI, they claimed that there was over 375,000 app downloads of Blue Sky as of April, so a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly one of the up-and-coming platforms. You can join communities aligned with your interests, mm-hmm. but right now it's invite only. It's not like you can just go like on Twitter, make a new account. It's not that simple. You have to be a little patient. But I think Blue Sky, it has a lot of potential, especially because like Jack Dorsey is a founder. He ran Twitter extremely well, I think, up until they sold it off to Elon. But I think it is good to have a presence there. X is falling apart. Facebook is for the geriatrics.
Oh, no.
You have Instagram. You have your TikToks. Most people aren't actively posting on there. But I do think, yeah, it doesn't hurt to have a presence.
Pulling no punches. All right. So Nick was the big proponent of Blue Sky here. How does that feel?
Yeah, not going to argue about it as not the place to take a brand right now.
Okay.
That Bandcamp energy is a lot of unrestricted, uncensored fun. I agree on top of those numbers that like for that kind of audience, it's not worth the risk for most big brands. That said, some media outlets have been doing really well. I would say if you're still on Tumblr as a brand,
yeah,
then great. Jump into Blue Sky.
Okay. Tariq, I see you nodding your head over there. How do we feel for you on our first two here, Threads and Blue Sky?
Yeah, Threads is interesting because, yeah, Instagram wanted to capitalize on what Twitter offers. But, you know, as Rashad mentioned, there's no DMs, there's no way to search for items, there's no like chronological order, et cetera. So I'm sure with everybody who uses Instagram, you saw probably a lot of your friends take their thread, screenshot it to their Instagram story and said, hey, I'm on Threads.
Yeah.
You probably saw a lot of that the first week and then I've literally seen nothing since, right? I think I've maybe seen like two people post about it. One guy was like, hey, I need a job. And the second person was like, does anyone use Threads anymore? That's pretty much it. So I didn't want to jump into it. And it seems like there's just not really much going around. In addition to what Rashad said, something interesting is that you sign up for Threads through Instagram, right? If you want to delete or remove your Threads account, you actually have to delete all of Instagram. You can't just remove the app because they're tied to each other. So for those of you who have Threads, and you think, I don't want this anymore, it either just stays on your phone and eats up all that data and you can't use it, or you have to delete Instagram, which no one's going to do that, and recreate the account. Second of all, like, even though I used to work for Meta, honestly, a great company to work for. I really enjoyed my time there. I thought it was a weird flex for them to say, oh, in the first 24 hours, we had this many people join. This is a record number. It's like, no, Meta started with 3 billion users. You can't brag about 10 million people using a service, right? Like, if you had nobody and you created nothing out of scratch, I'd be highly impressed. But since you already have that built-in database, I thought that was not a cool flex, just to be honest. Yeah, Blue Sky, yeah. I don't really use a whole lot, so I really can't speak to it, but I will echo the sentiments of that. I will kind of throw it back a little bit for a couple years ago. Did any of you guys ever use Clubhouse?
No. It was the platform that launched 1,000 panicked meetings in different marketing organizations and not much else.
Exactly.
It was a huge home for hustle culture. So I made the mistake of trying it for a couple of weeks and everything was hustle culture.
You know, I'm going to come in with a different take on the platforms.
Yeah.
For brands, I think they should do all of them, if not to just squat on their names so no one else does. And you can either parrot what you're doing on different platforms, which also makes for a really interesting A-B test opportunity. And I think it's a really good exercise to see if there are platforms that resonate with your brand and the type of stuff your brand does across each community.
I would push back on that, in that a large brand routinely does things on Twitter that get some blowback. But you can feasibly monitor just Twitter for all that blowback. You cannot feasibly monitor, or it is going to be three times as expensive to track how people are reacting on Threads, on Blue Sky, on Mastodon. And if you do not do that, especially on those smaller platforms, they will eat you alive for not really caring about them.
That's a good point.
For a small brand that's trying to do something edgy and, again, you know, is ready for being attached to weird stuff, go for it, invest the time.
So I accept your counter. I will say that I think media companies are probably exempt, because if they're looking to get comms or information out, it does behoove them to cast a wide net, like City of New York. I would be on all of them just to make sure everyone's seeing what's
up. My favorite media company.
And if you're the City of New York, you're already used to not replying to everyone's problems with you.
It's a living.
Fair. Rashad, you wanted to chime in then?
Yeah, I want to chime in on something Tariq said about like the number of users on these accounts. I think it's important to look at like the daily active users and the monthly active users. So when you see like public social media companies reporting on their user base, it's always DAU or MAU. If you just look at users, that's just like someone with an account. You can't really like quantify that, right? It's kind of hard to know, like, are they even like logging in? When I looked at LinkedIn's metrics, they have 930 million users, but how many of those are active, right?
Right.
So I think it's important when we sift through the data to actually pay attention to like who's actually signing in daily. That's a great metric to take a look at. And then like the actual number of minutes people use per day. Threads literally went from like 21 minutes per day on July 7th to just like 6 minutes per day, like a week later. The interest is waning right off the bat.
Who looks good in those metrics right now?
It's funny. You wouldn't think of it, but Facebook looks great. They still have 3 billion people checking their platform every single month. Now, Facebook's so tricky, right? Like if you have a million users on that platform, like an Audi, you post on Facebook, you're still going to get great engagement. If you're like a new brand, going on Facebook, starting from scratch with zero followers, you're really not going to have any luck for years. So I think it's really about like going where you are, fine-tuning the content you're posting, if it makes sense from like an economic standpoint, right?
Yeah.
And now, on the other hand, paid ads are very beneficial on Facebook. You put $50 behind a post, way more people are going to see it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can run an organic campaign on Facebook, but it really only makes sense if you already have a presence there, because if you have like 5,000 followers and you're posting daily on Facebook, you're going to get one or two likes. That's not going to move the needle.
Is there a quantity over quality argument to be had, though? And one other platform that we have not talked about right now as it relates to brands is LinkedIn, which really is an interesting example of that quality over quantity. They don't have the same user base as Facebook, but you can hyper-target your ads to the exact right person you want to see that post.
I've always said that LinkedIn by far has the most long-term value of any social media platform, because you always need a network, you always need a job. Even if you don't need a job, you need business somehow. I definitely agree with Christoph when we worked at MetLife. I know that the LinkedIn channel there was very, very active and we crushed it on LinkedIn, and we would do that. And CJ's right. It's like we could pinpoint to the exact people and these exact companies and these exact roles for where we want these ads to go. And it was great. So LinkedIn still, again, it has the best long-term value. And I think that will be the platform. Like if X comes and goes, if Meta comes and goes, which it may not, if Blue Sky, Mastodon, all these, like LinkedIn is still going to be there because of the lifelong value that the platform can provide people.
Definitely seems the most difficult to replicate the user base of what LinkedIn has and all the attendant metadata and the history. As the new platform wars are showing us, it's fairly easy to gin up a place where people can bullshit about current events. But to convince people to divulge the data of their entire careers, I think, is a taller task to get into later in the game. You did mention Mastodon in the middle of that sentence there, and I know CJ is crying into his beard that we haven't brought up Mastodon yet in this segment. So, Rashad, do we have any numbers that are going to make CJ feel good?
So, during the Twitter exodus last year, Mastodon's active monthly active users climbed from 380K to over 2.5 million in less than 2 months. However, a lot of those people didn't stick around. It was a challenging platform to use. I signed up. It was hard for me to find people. I literally was looking for CJ on Mastodon, could not find him. In less than 2 months, they dropped from 2.5 million users to 1.4 million. So that's a significant drop off, right?
Yeah.
And I believe it just like the overall, like the user interface, the ability to find people to connect with was just challenging. So if the user experience improved, there will be more people on that platform. But like CJ said earlier, I think it's good to have a presence on there as a brand. If the features people want aren't there, you're going to obviously find an alternative. We're like talking about like seven different platforms, right?
So this makes me think, Rashad, also of famously difficult for brands to figure out the usability of, but also famously beloved by Christoph, Discord, which is one of the things we actually have not brought up yet. How do you think Discord falls into relation with these other platforms from the brand perspective?
I'm seeing a lot more brands using Discord in general. I think it's a good place to be because your audience is there. You can tap into specific areas. I'm actually surprised more brands don't use it.
Yeah.
Discord isn't that new, but it's still kind of niche in a sense. But I think there's a big enough audience there. If brands really tap into that, I think they could really have a huge impact over there.
There's over 100 million people using Discord.
Yeah.
It's big. And I think the reason why brands do not dip into Discord as much as they should is because it's not a social network. It is a community platform.
Right.
People create microcosms in the form of servers that suit their own needs. It's either according to subculture, according to a game, a product. I have a Discord server with my friends, and honestly, it like saved my mental health during the pandemic. It plays a very different role. It is community. It is community how you want it to be. It is way easier to enforce governance upon it because you own your own little world.
Sure.
And it has the common layer of the interface, and you can just be a member of as many servers as you want, kind of like subreddits,
controlling
your own little universe.
Well, I guess the brand question is always, how do you encourage people to join your little fiefdom then? If there is no just general discord.com that has your stuff amongst all the other good stuff, what's the value prop you can offer?
So for a small brand, especially a media brand, that's one of the main reasons I go to Discord. I'm a fan of a lot of podcasts, and a fandom of a single podcast is about the right size to form a community instead of trying to find that community on the larger platforms. And that's why I think it actually is, among all the more closed community tools, the only one that is a real threat to social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen, as we discussed earlier, before Elon Musk took over Twitter, it was already becoming an unpleasant place. I mean, the man loves to talk about minimizing regretted user hours.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase regretted user hours to me means Twitter. It is where I go and feel bad. I go to Discord and I'm specifically reaching exactly the kind of people I was trying to reach. And yeah, maybe I can't find new people to pull into that in that tool. But I think Discord is now benefiting from a lot of people saying, oh, it's time to pull back from a town square. You don't want to hang out in a town square. You want to hang out at your favorite bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that, I think there's actually a really nice link between Discord and Mastodon in that sense, in that a decentralized social model allows for those microcosms to exist out in the open. If you have enough gravitational pull to create a subculture or community, not every brand is going to have a Discord. But if what you're making, what you're doing, what you're providing to the public creates people wanting to connect around it, and you want to tap into them and create positive experiences, gather feedback from them, that's great. You want that kind of back and forth.
Something that came up a couple times in that was centralized and decentralized. CJ, I know you are a fan of the impending Fediverse and its decentralized promises as well. Where do we stand on the general consolidation, the lack thereof, interplay of these different platforms?
I think the answer is kind of both. When I talk about being decentralized, I'm talking about a lowest common denominator of how these platforms build their data models so that they can all share across each other, ActivityPub, et cetera. So Threads is going to join the Fediverse. Blue Sky is part of the Fediverse. Mastodon is part of the Fediverse. And it's essentially an open source protocol for how everyone can be visible to each other and see everything everybody is putting out there. And then you get to choose what you see or don't see. So I think the Fediverse is going to win regardless because it creates a standardization and it protects communication communities from the whims of megalomaniacs who have no business owning communication platforms.
With the obvious caveat that none of those platforms yet work with each other. They are just built in a way that they could, in a way that there wasn't true before. But there's a little bit of that echo of 2004 to 2006, when many social networks were promising this sort of decentralized...
Right. They were playing nicely together.
Yeah, until it became very profitable not to.
They want to set themselves up to be fluid in terms of how the information is shared, but they're only going to do it if it's financially advantageous to do so.
Which Threads now has a motivation to say, oops, we don't have everyone. We need to link up.
Yeah, yeah.
So this convo actually has got my mind swirling in a good way. It's definitely beneficial, like Nick said, where you can join communities that you actually care about. I just think, in my perspective, decentralized platforms are kind of like harder to use, harder to navigate. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, for the time being, like, decentralized platforms are more just structured. There's friendlier usability in order to find, say, like a brand or person you are interested in. But in the long run, I do agree with the guys. I think that those decentralized communities will win out. I just think there needs to be a way to make it like more user-friendly. I know I said that word a million times, but it's like true. Like, just making it easier to navigate, I think, is imperative.
So, Tarek, do you have any tips for doing some of that hand-holding, especially with larger brands, as they're trying to get into some of these platforms that they are less familiar with? Some tips for the hand-holding of how you get acclimated to these, how you find the people you're looking to find, especially in these sort of new decentralized options?
Yeah, I think creating guides.
Yeah.
Here's Twitter 101. Here's Facebook 101.
Yeah.
I think if you create something like that for these new platforms, it, you know, Rashad kept saying like it needs to be easy to use. And I think like with any new platform, there's not only a learning curve, but some people are scared to use it too. So if you let them know like, hey, watch this 5-minute video on the 5 most important things about this platform, and it helps people ease themselves into it. And to be honest, that should not come from some random user or some random YouTube person or influencer. It should come from the brand itself, right? So Mastodon should say, here's how to use our platform in 5 minutes or less, and you get them started. So I think the more guides and the less scary it is up front, the more people are likely to use it.
There is definitely a UX issue when it comes to a lot of these decentralized platforms, including Mastodon. What I will say is, since it's open source, anyone can create a better solution and it can be adopted in. So I think it's only a matter of time. But I also remember when Twitter first started, I was just like sending text messages to get tweets out. So, I think they all had their ramp up period, and the early users were people that like trudged their way through and got through the gates. And I think Mastodon is very much like that. Like, anecdotally, there's more PhDs on Mastodon than I've seen on any other platform per capita. That kind of says something about the nature of the platform and what it takes to get on there. The other thing is, there's a big difference between what brands should do and what experts who drive the brands should do. Mm-hmm. Because social eminence for people who are individuals who happen to work for companies have a lot of power on different social platforms, on Discord, on Reddit, on Mastodon. All of those platforms behoove somebody who is the genius behind the product that the company sells. And if they put themselves forward as, I'm an expert in this field, I want to share my expertise and I want to contribute to the discourse of the subculture or subject matter I'm a part of, not only do they benefit from increased notoriety, fame, getting their voice and their concepts out, the company benefits because people trust other people instead of brand voices. And we learn that time and time again, like by a ratio of 2-1. So for a social eminence play, these other platforms are super important.
So I want to end with one quick exercise here. And I think we're going to sort of hold to this distinction between thought leaders and brands. Let's then choose the top three in order platforms that a brand should be focusing their energy on right now, and then top three in order that a thought leader at a brand should be focusing their energy on. Let's see if they overlap. Let's see if we all agree.
Can you say that again?
The top three platforms that a brand should be focusing their energy and resources on in order, and the top three that a thought leader, a person of eminence within a certain brand, should be focusing their time on in order. Let's see if we agree on what they are. Let's see if they overlap. Rashad, would you like to start?
I think if any brand has benefited the most from Twitter's downfall, it is LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I think that's the most beneficial platform for a B2B brand to be on right now, because it's a great way to highlight your employees, whether it's your senior execs who are thought leaders, right? Or a new intern. I think it really gives people the opportunity to learn about the people behind the scenes. That really resonates well with a lot of people. So I think that's the best way to get engagement is showcase your people. Don't post too much about products.
Yeah.
LinkedIn right now is the front runner in the race.
All right. LinkedIn number one. What's number two for you, Rashad?
This is tricky because I have worked with B2B and B2C brands.
Yeah.
And we actually didn't mention this platform yet, but I do think there is some rising momentum for more brands, lump them both in, right? B2B and B2C to be on TikTok. We haven't mentioned this one, but TikTok has over a billion monthly active users. Now, you can't really go on TikTok and just post like a product video. That's going to get zero engagement.
Yeah.
But if you can tap into popular trends on TikTok, that's a great way for your brand to get more recognition. Obviously, most of the brands that do perform well on TikTok are B2C, right? Your Duolingos,
yeah,
your Chipotles, your Scrub Daddies. If you have fun on the platform, if you engage with your community in a way that seems authentic, TikTok is a great place to be because there's so many younger users on there, right? The new generation of buyers, right? Millennials, Gen Z, soon to be Gen Alpha. They're all joining TikTok. So if you want to reach people where they are, and these people are eventually going to be working for B2B brands, right?
Yeah.
I think it's important to be on TikTok as well because that's where your folks are.
Fair. All right. Number three.
Instagram.
Okay.
So Instagram is interesting as well, kind of similar to LinkedIn. I think it's just imperative to highlight your people, right? You want to hire new people, you go on Instagram, you showcase the culture. What are you doing behind the scenes? There's so many opportunities to post on Instagram in a different variety of ways. So you kind of have to fit into the algorithm. You don't want to be like posting content that is irrelevant. You kind of want to post about people. And even for our clients, right? We see like whenever one of our clients posts about people, it performs better than if they post about the product. So I think, making sure you're aligned with what the brand is asking for and posting content that is actually relevant on Instagram.
All right. That's a good top three right there. Tarek, do you have a different top three?
I did not have a different top three,
okay,
but I have a different order.
All right, let's
go. So I do agree with Rashad. I think LinkedIn should be number one, especially from the B2B perspective. That's where your audience is because these companies are wanting to target basically decision makers, and your decision makers aren't necessarily on Instagram or TikTok or Snapchat, which we didn't talk about either, but they are on LinkedIn. So I definitely think the content should be there, should be good quality content, good graphics, a good CTA, a good message, and you can really get some good traffic out of that. Second, I will say Instagram for brands. Even from the B2B side, you can still use Instagram in kind of a fun way. Again, you have a lot of people that are on Instagram. They'll scroll through your feed. They'll see your content. They may want to engage with it or share it. And I think that a lot of B2B brands do Instagram very boring, but I think there's an opportunity for them to do something good there. And might as well, it's a massive platform, might as well use it. And then third is definitely TikTok. You know, I think especially with the B2B brand, TikTok is a great platform to educate younger users on what your company does. Mm-hmm. If your company is a B2B brand, they don't even, you know, a younger user, heck, a lot of adults don't even know what a B2B brand is. But if you can make it more relatable, you know, as Rashad said, talk about the people, take some aspects of your company and break it down in a very simple video form, it can do very well because you'll get good numbers, you'll get good views. Even though TikTok algorithm is hard to beat, you can still tap into it in a very good way and get some pretty good content out of it. So yeah, that's top three is Rashad, just a little bit different order.
All right, let's see. Are we going to break the consensus in this room?
So I do think Mastodon is a dark horse edge case. It's not in the top three, but I think brands should be aware and look around and mess with it. My top three are LinkedIn number one, specifically LinkedIn with very targeted paid behind it. Yeah. I think the paid behind LinkedIn for B2B brands should be the number one allocation of budget. You shouldn't be pumping money into Twitter at all. You shouldn't be pumping money into Instagram if you're not already in LinkedIn. If you know exactly who signs the contract to buy your stuff, LinkedIn is where you should be putting your money. Mm-hmm. And you should be creating content targeted to those people. You can also showcase people, employees, culture as well in the same place. Number two, I'm actually going to say YouTube. I'm going to say YouTube because YouTube has a profound search benefit applied to it. If you have a product or service that requires evergreen content around education, explanation, engagement, I think that's a great place to be. And it is way less risky than TikTok mm-hmm. for brand blowback, which I think is a big risk with TikTok. It's way too easy if you are a brand that has done something historically terrible for people to turn it around and throw it in your face. People will shred you on TikTok if you're not self-actualized about your brand and how people see it. Mm-hmm. And Twitter was a risky place for that as well.
Yeah.
And I think all brands should be self-actualized about how people really see them and what they're going to call out anyway.
Yeah.
Three, I think, is going to be Instagram. I think it's a good platform. I think it's tied to a good paid network. I think you can benefit from the larger Meta ecosystem of people seeing your stuff beyond just Instagram. You can scratch that TikTok itch with Reels. The overlap between the two is pretty high. It's a pretty close to a circle Venn diagram between the two. Mm-hmm. So for brands, those are my three.
Nick?
I'm not going to shake the boat much. It, for me, is LinkedIn at the top, even though I will never quite understand LinkedIn, and that's why I assume everybody should stick to it. Didn't know that many people wanted to hang out at work more than they needed to, but they do, and they're the decision makers. Second, Discord. I really love whenever I am finally getting into some professional tool like Photoshop and I find, you know, the community of power users. Obviously, anyone with a developer community is going to want to try that. You obviously are always looking for more places to get your users to help each other.
Yeah.
And Discord provides a way for them to do that that doesn't feel forced, gives them some room to explore and find new things, gets ways for you to discover how people are using your tools in ways you didn't expect. And YouTube, I agree, it's lower risk for immediate blowback because of the effort that goes into it. You do have to put that effort into it. You have to be aware of what trends are on YouTube.
Yeah. Is there anything that has made someone's list that is markedly different for your individual thought leader within a company?
For somebody who works at a company who has something of value to add about the core product. LinkedIn's number one. Makes sense. It's easy. Yep. The brand can boost it. Take advantage of it. Great. Two is Reddit. Mm-hmm. I think that you can convey your expertise on Reddit. It becomes evergreen. You're immediately validated by saying, I'm the expert here. I do this. And then I think it's a combo between Discord and Mastodon.
Yeah.
Discord's obvious. I think, Nick, the value props you made ring so true to me for individuals because it's the people responding in that Discord server for the brand that are really driving the value for the community. And Mastodon is just a place where you can get the hyper-focus of a specific culture or product or interest to the point where the engagement's going to be really high relative to the user base. Mm-hmm. So those are mine.
Great. Anyone else have any distinct differences for the individual?
I have actually a subset within a platform. So I agree, LinkedIn should still be number one. I'm going to go against the grain. I still think Twitter is number two.
Whoa.
Even though less people are using Twitter, there are still a lot more Twitter users out there than a lot of other platforms. I still pretty much tweet every day. I mean, it's an N equals one, but there's still a lot of good conversation that goes out there. So I'm still, like, honestly, I'll probably use Twitter until it gets shut down. That's how much. But
hell yeah.
The one I'm getting to specifically is YouTube Shorts. So specifically with this one, for any of you who don't know, 60-second videos, they go on there. I agree with Christoph is that it's the search engine behind it. But again, knowing what is going on the page, you're getting your videos out there, I think you can make a huge impact if you're a thought leader on YouTube Shorts. So I'm going to stick with that one at number three.
Love it.
I have like five that are two in that, like you say, you need to be on TikTok, Instagram, and of course, I didn't think about it until you said it, YouTube Shorts. You need to be doing, as a thought leader, some short form video where you are just talking to a camera.
Yeah.
A lot of people are very interested in that right now. now is the time to stand in front of the nicest looking wall in your house and talk for 3 minutes about something that recently came up. I don't know if that will be true in 2-4 years.
Yeah.
Now is the surge of that on TikTok. The number of LinkedIn adjacent content that I'm seeing over on TikTok and getting into, because you can make jokes about your industry and it will, TikTok knows how to deliver it. Use the fact that TikTok right now is the king algorithm. They know how to find exactly the people who want the weird specific thing you're talking about. Mm. And that's why the second choice is Blue Sky or Mastodon or anything hooked into the Fediverse, because you want to get a foothold. Eventually that Fediverse is going to be the major replacement and you want to be one of the first people on there. You versus someone of equal quality who came in a couple of years later, you're going to win.
All right, Rashad, hammer position. Anything new from you for the individual?
Yeah, so I actually agree with Tarek. So I think that being on Twitter is still imperative. Mm-hmm. You want to go where the audience is. If you know that people are going to be seeing your content, it's such an easy way to engage with them. Still beneficial, even though the platform seems to be disintegrating on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And then I would say anywhere really, but Instagram is probably great for an executive. I think like a thought leader, you don't want to be overly promotional about work content on Instagram, right? Unless you're posting like behind the scenes content, work outings, cultural things about your company, you name it. I think being on a YouTube Shorts is great. Any video platform, right? TikTok, I would say those are probably equal in my mind in the third spot. So just being able to like showcase your expertise in a way that resonates with people in a video format. And we even see that on LinkedIn with some of our clients. When they post videos on the platform featuring their executives, that content always performs way better than just like a text post with like a link and a photo, right? So anywhere you can post videos performs well, YouTube Shorts, TikTok, you name it.
Thank you all for dropping by both virtually and in person and helping us get the lay of the land here. We will be checking in couple months from now, maybe end of the year or something, to see where things have shifted. We did something similar to this at the end of last year, which is really helpful because we are a far cry from a decade ago when things seemed pretty steadfast for where you should be and what was growing and what was good. Rashad, Tarek, CJ, Nick, thank you all. And a primary thank you, the only thing in this world more universally beloved than LinkedIn, are our listeners.
Hey,
thank you for listening for another week. And I'm going to ask one and only one thing of you. If you liked this, any of it, if you found it even moderately edifying, think of one other person who might like it and suggest they give a listen. See you next month. Thank you, everyone.